The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
From the back.
But why don't we go ahead and get started? So, I'm David Snyder. This is Anna Gilpern and Andy Pike. I teach contracts and commercial law. Both their U.S. and international and comparative pieces, and Professor Gilpern does banks, financial institutions, financial regulation, that kind of thing, again, both U.S. and international, and Professor Pike does tax, both U.S. and international and comparative. And the purpose of this session is to try to help you, if you're interested in business law, to choose your courses. And we have a lot of courses, and I know you probably have a lot of questions. I'm going to ask Professors Gilpern and Pike to give you whatever advice they have. I'll give you a bit of advice, and we'll keep our remarks reasonably brief, so there's plenty of time for questions. I want arm wrestle.
Call it.
You do it.
After I went to that effort, okay. I think you're here to talk about business law courses. I don't know what business law is. There is no such thing. Business law is an umbrella that comprises perhaps a dozen major practice areas. You know, you talk about human rights, that's probably a smaller practice area than any of the business law disciplines. Most of you don't know what you're interested in, but among the business law specialties, I just wrote down a couple: corporate law, securities law, tax law, antitrust, commercial law, secured transactions, antitrust, real estate, estate planning, health law, international business transactions, intellectual property, financial institutions, and the like. You can spend your career specializing in any one of those without a problem. You're all first years, right? Us, yeah, first years? I'm sorry, you're about to be second years? You don't know what you're interested in yet. In addition, when people think of business law, sometimes they think they're really talking about transactional practice. That's one part of business law, helping clients navigate the incentives or pitfalls of doing transactions a certain way and advising them on the best way to proceed. However, most litigators litigate business cases. Very few litigators get to litigate constitutional law stuff. My favorite story about this concerns one of our most prominent alums, Tommy Goldstein, who's was named one of the three most influential appellate lawyers by Legal Times of the last decade. For his age, he's argued more private Supreme Court cases. So I was talking to him once. I said, what would you do differently, knowing what you do now, in terms of taking courses at law school? What advice would you have to give students who want to do what you did? And his answer was, oh, it's easy. Take more business cases. Take securities law. Take pension law. Take bankruptcy. And this is a guy who argues before the Supreme Court. And I said, why? And he said, the Supreme Court doesn't hear cases. Clients don't hire you to litigate. They hire you to litigate the matters that they're willing to pay you for. And that overwhelmingly involves private law related issues. Okay, given that, I'm sorry. So, transactional, litigation, what else? Governmental work. The two of us did most of our business law related stuff in government. This town reeks of agencies that regulate business matters. The SEC, the IRS, most of the Department of Justice, an agency that I have a very, very fond feeling towards, the FDIC, because it pays our rent. My wife works there. There are about four different banking regulatory agencies, the Federal Communications Commission, the FTC. You can go on and on. Most of what our government does has an impact on business law related stuff. So whether you want to do government, private sector, whether you want to do litigation or transactional work, these courses are relevant for that. Having said that, what do you do next semester? What's the suggested sequence that makes sense for you? And the answer for anybody who's taken a course with me, they know it already, the answer is it depends. There's no singular path to go. If you think you might have an interest in business-related stuff, there's two courses I recommend you take next fall. One is criminal procedure, because you've got to. And the second is business associations. Business associations tends to be a prerequisite for a bunch of other courses. It also introduces a very important notion of fiduciaries, which a lot of law tends to turn on. Apart from that, try to figure out some things you might be interested in. Should you take evidence, for example? Without question. When should you take evidence? Before you graduate. If you think you want to do litigation, particularly business litigation, but you definitely think you want to do clinic in your third year, and you want to do a clinic that will require you to be certified and have evidence as a prereq, then take evidence sometime next year. Other than that, I took evidence, I think, second semester, third year, and it did me fine. I actually did some litigation work involving tax matters as well. So, what courses should you take? Are there sort of courses I consider to be more basic? Sure. I'm a little bit biased on this count. I think tax is a good course. And to the dismay of a large number of my students, I think it's interesting. Something in the secured transactions area, whether it's secured transactions or bankruptcy, given our world of debtor-creditor relationships, I think those are important. But it depends on what your interests are. If you're fascinated with intellectual property stuff, mostly that's business-related. Take some IP courses. If you think you have an interest in health, a lot of the transactional work around health law is traditional transactions, corporate stuff, financing stuff. Take a health law related course. Find out what interests you, and after you take a semester of courses, build upon that. There's no one sequence that makes sense for everybody. We'll take questions. I'm going to shut up now, but I make a blanket offer. If anybody wants to talk about things outside of this, I'm more than happy to do so.
Well, apropos evidence, and not knowing what you want to do in life, you may have inklings, and I guess my dominant, or my number one point is trust your gut if you have a gut. And that comes directly from...
Who doesn't have a gut?
You know, it has multiple meanings. That's what's so nice about it. My biggest mistake in life, in my law school life, rather, was taking evidence. And this is the reason. Not that you shouldn't take evidence, but the only time I had a chance to take evidence, it was a choice between evidence and Roman law. And I thought, dear God, I'm going to be a lawyer. How can I possibly not take evidence? Well, the only time I was ever in court and had to even think about evidence was when I was in small claims court trailing my husband suing our painter who, you know, didn't paint our deck right. And thank God he didn't show up, because I would have, you know, passed out of antipathy to the court proceedings. Right? Meanwhile, I have spent a huge amount of my life thinking about civil law issues, the interaction between common law and civil law and public international law, yes, both in private practice and in the public sector, for which Roman law would have been immensely valuable. I had a gut feeling. I didn't listen to it. I was a big dummy. Because I never again, you know, I heard about evidence in the bar review course. Rest assured, I didn't hear about Roman law in the bar review course. So if you have a strong feeling, listen to it. It might be right. That's number one. If you don't, by all means, go forth and conquer. Number two, I really strongly agree with, I want to emphasize something Professor Pike said, which is there is transactional work and there's litigation. And business law does both. But a lot of people have temperamental inclinations one way or another. And to the extent you can, and it's pretty hard in law school, try to get both experiences. I mean, for me, a contract negotiation exercise in my first year was totally formative. You know, I realized this is what I wanted to do in life, and so I've been inflicting it on all my students ever since. But I love transactional work. As you can tell, I wasn't a big fan of litigation. I also want to stress regulatory work and government work, right? Administrative law, very important. It's a different type of activity, and you don't know for which of these you're temperamentally more suited. And maybe you're suited to all of it, which is great. But try different modes of activity. Third, learn more about different kinds of law. Right, there is public law, there's private law, there's code law. So make sure you don't go through law school just doing cases. Take a code class just to learn how to read a code, if nothing else. So this is where UCC classes come in. This is where tax comes in, right?
Bankruptcy,
absolutely, right?
Immigration.
and immigration, and I'll get to that because that's business law too. Right, but try to figure out, to the extent you're trying to figure out your menu, make sure it's diverse enough for you to learn different kinds of law. Third, and maybe final, there's another reason there are many reasons to do business law, and including the fact that there's, you know, relatively more work in that than in, you know, appellate litigation before the Supreme Court. But at a time like this, it's also a matter of civic responsibility. I don't know if anybody heard, we've had a little financial economic crisis for the past couple of years. Kind of important. A lot of people I teach come to class saying, gee, you know, I can't figure out heads or tails about, you know, a synthetic CDO, and yet it's bringing down my universe. Well, part of citizenship is A, learning how these things work, and B, learning what we as lawyers can do about it. And I feel very strongly that business law education is part of kind of owning our economy and owning our country. So even if you don't plan to be a transactional lawyer, take some of this stuff so that you can be part of the political process. And my final point is also just trying to clear up some misconceptions, which is business law is not all about big fat corporations and, you know, wholesale finance caricatures that you hear out there. It's about immigrant remittances. It's about nonprofit tax. It's about small business. It's about, you know, personal tax. It's about economic development. It's just as much about poverty as it is about wealth. So if you care about poverty, if you care about social justice, if you care about, you know, what's right and wrong and whatnot, take business law. You will be exceptionally useful to whatever cause you want to pursue. And with that, I pass it on.
Thank you. Those were terrific presentations. I was planning to give you a quick tour on the web of some resources, and I'm suppressing. Maybe I should cover this up for a minute while I don't say what I am about the location of this. So everybody pick up your chair and turn it around. So I'm sorry about this, but
I was looking this way.
Okay, so here we are at everybody's favorite website, and I'm sure your homepage. So there's probably another way to get to where I'm going to tell you to go, but the only way I know to do it is to go to the homepage and then you type in business at the end of that thing. You can tell I'm very web savvy. And then we have our extremely rudimentary looking business law program website. This reflects my coolness and savvy. The thing is, this actually, despite the fact that we don't have any pictures, and if you want good pictures, go to the Abercrombie site and go under gallery. Okay, so that's where there are good pictures. But if you don't want good pictures and you want substance, you can come here. And so you're wondering what to take. So click where it says curriculum in law and business. More pretty pictures, again, available at Abercrombie. You want to know what business courses there are? It says, please click here for a list of courses. That's what you do. That's how it works. And
then,
they
understand the internet.
Oh, they do? And you get this document called Curriculum in Law and Business, and it lists the courses. Pretty much all the courses that I know of that relate to business. And we've tried to take a pretty broad gauge view of what the business law courses are, and to think about it not the way law schools do so much, but try to think about it more the way lawyers do, which is by practice area. So I'm sure you can't see this, but I want you to just sort of see what's here so you can play around with it on your own. So we've got business entities, securities, and finance. That's essentially corporations. That's your business associations kind of course. Commercial law and bankruptcy and so on. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I want you to see that we've got different things, including fairly specialized ones like real estate. But a lot of people think, oh, you know, I'm really interested in that stuff. That's what I want to know. What do they have in real estate? You can go to this document. We did go for some duplicate listings, so, you know, we've tried to put courses as best we could tell where they belong. You want to do intellectual property? We tried to go through the IP courses and all the ones that related to business, which is practically all of them, maybe not quite all. We tried to list them all here. Professor Pike claims that you'll know that this fact that they're blue and underlined means that if you click on them, then it takes you to the course description. I had a Dean's Fellow do this. Okay, so there are a lot of them.
Dean's Fellow clicked for you.
I can actually click myself, want to see. There are roughly 150 business law, business-related courses. I'm going to guess that that's probably more courses than a lot of law schools have, period. But anyway, it's amazing. Partly, we've got a big faculty that does business law. We also have a lot of really good adjuncts. So anyway, I think you click on this arrow and you go back. Yeah, cool. So then we got some other useful things here, like stuff that has prerequisites and so on. But I have a feeling what you're looking for is some advice, some way to get me through. Say, okay, 150 courses, that sounds really great. I can take 8. Maybe not even that many by the time you do all the different stuff. How do I figure out what to do? Well, what we've done is we've tried to talk to the members of the business law faculty and said, look, we have a lot of students. They want advice on what to do. I'm going to give them some advice, but y'all should give them some advice too, because look, y'all have different interests, you have different outlooks, you have different needs. So do the faculty. We have different views. Some of us think that, you know, each other are profoundly mistaken on certain things. But that's okay. We're still friends. And so we just put it all up here. So four of us wrote things about how to think about stuff. And despite all that, they're actually not all that inconsistent. They just give you slightly different views. So there's something by Professor Bennett, who sort of stresses the value of clinics. She's in the community and economic development clinic. So she gives you that piece and lawyering skills and really nicely done document there. Professor Efros gives you his sort of overview on different resources, different things to think about. But let me just click on these things so you can see what they look like. So, you know, this is just a standard document. None of them are too long. I think the longest ones are Professor Efros's and mine, and they're all of 4 pages. So it's not a big deal. You want to know about antitrust law, Professor May wrote about that. That's just like a page. That's because I didn't take antitrust in law school. I still don't know what it's about, so I really wasn't able to explain it. And then this, for whatever it's worth, is my take. I could keep mine to 4 pages because I use really small print. And what I tried to do here is to explain the different things that Professor Pike told you about. One of the first things I say is, you know, business law means lots of things and nothing. It's not a term lawyers really use. So I try to go through and explain roughly what lawyers mean when they say something like corporate or M&A or securities or commercial. Like most normal human beings think commercial and corporate are the same. But lawyers don't use those terms in terms of practice areas quite the same. So I try to explain what this stuff is about. And so that's under my stuff you need to know heading. And then I try to tell you about the different courses that there are, just sort of basic stuff. And then I know from experience that what y'all really want is lists. So I give you some lists. And my list of courses, much like Professor Pike's list of courses, but you know, there will be some variations. The courses I think everybody should take, I think that's business associations, tax, and secured transactions, or you know, bankruptcy would be okay too. You know, something about the law of lending, VA, you have to take that. Tax, I want to say this because Professor Pike already said it, but he's a tax guy, so you can't believe him. But tax, you have to take tax. First of all, it drives so many transactions. Tax drives everything. So you need to take it. The much more surprising thing about tax is you'll like it. Now, I know you're all thinking, that's probably true of most people, but not me. You're going to like it. I know, it's surprising. I can't really explain why. If I tried, you would believe me even less. But the basic idea is that tax turns out to be a course about social policy. We do a lot through tax. Plus, it's this really cool, elegant legal instrument that a lot of smart people have put together in some really cool ways and some really irrational ways and some super rational ways. And you know, we've got great tax professors here. And you'll get it. You'll be able to do it. And you'll be sort of surprised. Some of you will be. Some of you already know you can do it. It's not the same as accounting. It's not what CPAs do. It's what lawyers do. So you got to take that stuff. Secured transactions, that's the closest thing we've got to a course on the law of lending. Since we live in a credit economy, you really have to have something either secured, and I should disclose I teach that, so I'm probably biased. I'm not the only one who teaches it, by the way. So if you hate me, that's okay. You can take it from Professor Hughes. Or you could take bankruptcy or you know something else like that. So I try to explain all that here and give a bit of general advice. Okay, so that's all there. And then we've got some other information up here. Again, I at least think it's fairly strong on substance, so use it. All of us tried to write those documents in very direct ways. So they're easy to read, they're quick to read, and you can, I hope they'll be user-friendly. So I want to stop here, and do we want to go back to the front of the room, or yeah. we'll just stick here. Want to go to Abercrombie? Shall we do? Are you going to show them something, or you want me to? Okay, you want me to vamp and cover? Okay. So, questions while we're having this brief interlude. Yes.
What's better to take first, personal income tax?
Yes. Because personal is a prerequisite to corporate, I would usually take personal first. I'm sorry.
And not concurrent.
I would advise against it for reasons of sanity.
One of the things you get in this information is some information on prerequisites. So BA and basic tax are prerequisites for a lot of other stuff. So that is a good idea to take those early on, subject to the piece of advice that you don't want to take too many big hard courses all at once. And how do you figure out what the big hard courses are? Talk to upperclassmen. They're going to be more reliable on that than we are. I feel fairly certain that evidence and basic tax fit that category.
Talk to upperclassmen. I think a two three credit courses and a two credit course often will be quite a bit more work than 2-4 credit courses, unless you're taking Professor Rice's evidence, who believes that you should do nothing but prepare for his class. My show and tell. I think a number of you have been to myamerican.edu. I believe extremely strongly that if you have a choice between a really interesting class with a terrible professor and a class that you're not primarily focused on, but with a great professor, take the great professor. That doesn't mean you ignore sensible courses that might help you get a job and prepare you for a career. But you should understand who is viewed by your peers as very good and who's not. So I'm sure most of you know this, but I want to point this out to you. On the myamerican.edu site, which I assume you're familiar with, there's something called academics. The bottom of that, there's a line. You can't read it, but I can because I'm right up here. But the very bottom one, WCL evaluation of faculty reports. This is available online. Anybody who has access to myamerican.edu can access it. And you can get by faculty. Click on somebody who you know you don't want to take, and click across terms. And if the damn thing were working quicker, but it's working slowly because the university is in pre-registration, you can see the courses the professor has taught, and you can get the one-page summary that tells you what the students perceived of the faculty, and the last three questions are the most summary ones, which says what the students thought this professor should be taught by this professor again, and overall this professor is not a bozo. Click on that, it'll tell you something. It's not everything. But if you're seeing a professor that gets, like my friend Professor Robbins, 5.2 on a 5 scale, that means the students think he walks on water, which he does too. But if you see somebody with a 1.6, there were major things going on that were not good in that classroom. It's a bit of data that most people don't think about, but it's very worthwhile using.
Great point.
Around?
Yeah. We'll just stay here, right?
Okay.
Okay, questions?
I had another business professor recommend taking an accounting, some sort of accounting-related class. Could you recommend or point us towards one of those?
So Ken Anderson said this?
Yes. Yes, he did.
There are three things you could do. There's a course on accounting for lawyers, which is really sort of accounting-ish, but sort of how accounting is usable for lawyers. Or you could just ask Professor Anderson to take his corporate finance class, which will force feed you some accounting, I personally don't think a course in accounting up at the business school is what you need, because then you learn technical rules about accounting as opposed to what you need to know how to get information from accounting data. I think the latter is what you want, but it's not what you would get in an introductory to accounting up at the business school. Do you just...
I agree. I think Professor Anderson is totally right. And in so one of the things I've tried to do so far unsuccessfully is to get some of our really successful alumni who are business lawyers to write some of those advice things to say, here's what I think you should take. And they always say they're going to do it. And, you know, getting the documents out of them, I just haven't succeeded yet. It's probably because I'm not paying at the right rate. But what they always say, well, maybe not always, but the most generally true statement I get from them is tell them they have to understand accounting. You have to be able to read financial statements. So there's a whole speech. I've heard this speech so many times. I've memorized it. It goes something like this. Accounting is the language of business. And if you don't understand the language, you can't work in that world. And I think that's right on. And I just hear that over and over from senior successful lawyers. So you have to have it. So the question then becomes, how do you get it? And I think Professor Pike is absolutely right. There are different ways you can do it. I tend to think that the accounting for lawyers thing is the better way to go, because that tends to give you what you need as a lawyer from accounting, as opposed to what you need or would need as an accountant from accounting, which is what the business school courses are like typically. I will say what I did, it worked for me and might work for you, is I did what I am advising you not to do. I took a standard business school accounting course, but I did it actually one summer while I was working, and it wasn't a big deal. You know, it was a night school class from a university that I wasn't even really enrolled in. I just took that one course, and I just sort of got it out of the way. And I think I audited it. No, you got to do it for real, because otherwise you'll check out and you won't really do it. But I did that. You could do it that way or while you're here. You know, you don't want it to mess up your GPA, but you do want to be serious about it. And that'll give you what you need. Is it the best way to do it? Maybe, maybe not. It depends on whether you want to spend one of your courses on accounting for lawyers, which we do, by the way, have a really interesting professor teaching, and you'll get some really interesting stuff. And this is sort of not the piece we're telling you about. The piece we're telling you about is you got to know this stuff so you can communicate. That's, by the way, just as true for litigators. If you're doing commercial litigation, there is no way you'll be able to figure out damages until you can read in discovery the other side's financial statements. Okay, that's where the damages are going to have to come from. Absolutely crucial. But there is this other piece of accounting which you read about in the newspapers. So you remember Enron, right? That was about accounting, right? The crises we had before, the big crisis, were accounting scandals. And that has to do with understanding what's going on, about how to get these transactions off balance sheet and so on. You can't understand that until you understand how accounting works.
No dissent here, but there is, you know, there's financial reporting, there's regulatory accounting, there's tax accounting. I think what you need is a set of skills that would enable you to absorb this stuff rather than a fixed body of knowledge. So it's a question of opportunity cost.
I'm going to take some pride in being the outlier. I've never taken an accounting course in my life. If you want to pick up some
and
stuff...
And look what happened to them.
Everybody assumes I'm an accountant by background. No. So I've never had an accounting course. I'm pretty good at understanding financial transactions. A way to get something of an education is a couple times a week, go to the Wall Street Journal online, pick a story about some thing that they're writing about that's not non-business news. The Wall Street Journal has some of the best writers in the country, and they talk about things that's designed not just for the technician. It's for a generally sophisticated but not technician audience. And by reading those things, you'll assimilate some of the accounting stuff. There are other ways to go about it, but I think that's a way halfway measured.
Reading the Lehman report.
Other questions? Just stretching?
Yes.
Do you know if this might be a question for the Register, but with business associations, since it seems like that's the one to take first, if they have enough classes to meet the demand or if there's a lot of people on the wait list?
In the former life, I was one of the academic deans, and one of our jobs was to figure out what should go on these things. Business associations, for the fall, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 sections.
That's just the fall.
There's a section over the summer. Now, business association is taken either first semester, second year, or second semester, third year. All the public international law people, public defenders, they take it second semester, third year. So not every second year student wants to take business associations next fall. There may be waiting lists. In my experience, you know, Professor Wallace often has a, gets filled up first, because he's a nice, easygoing guy, and people think he's not.
He looks like one.
And he acts like one.
Yeah.
But he's every bit as demanding in his own understated way. And I think Professor Siegel sometimes has a reputation for being real hard. She's wonderful. If you think you're interested in business, in my experience, Professor Siegel's class never closes out. It's like my tax class. You've got plenty of students. She's great. But
and talk to people who've taken these professors, and you'll hear, but they will sing the praises of the view. So don't just trust us, because first of all, we could be misinformed, but on this one, you know, talk to upperclassmen, and you'll get the real deal, and on this one, you'll find out we're right.
But Professor Anderson, who hasn't taught business association for a number of years, but has taught advanced business courses, he's teaching. We've gotten him back in the basic course as well. So you have 4 very good choices. And in all likelihood, people will not be closed out of that course. They might be closed out of a particular section, not the whole course. And there will be at least a couple of sections in the spring as well. So that's at least 7 sections for next academic year.
You mentioned earlier that taking an accounting class wouldn't be the best, but would there be a point where it would be advantageous to take any other business class at the other school?
If you're interested, sure. And we have a JD MBA program, so if that's something you're interested in, you know, it's a good program. Professor Wallace is actually the director of that program, and we have a fair number of students every year who do a JD MBA program. And then, of course, short of doing a whole JD MBA, you're allowed to do, I think, 2 courses.
You can get 6 credits up there and get credit for it towards your JD degree, no extra charge.
So if you're interested, by all means, do it. The other thing I would say is some people come saying, I really want to work in a particular industry. I'd be a little wary of thinking you know now what you really are going to wind up doing, because when I talk to students about that, say, at reunions or alumni gatherings 5 years or 10 years out, I say, so did you wind up doing that? They just laugh. But occasionally they do. And so if any of you happen to be that person, and there are a few around who, you know, you're a telecom guy and there's a telecom course at the B school, you know, knowing the business, knowing the industry is absolutely crucial for whatever kind of lawyer you want to be. So, you know, that would be a good reason to do it. Or if you're interested, you know, it's a fine thing to do. I don't think it's something that you have to rush out to do, but
we have a huge number of courses. If there's something that you have a specific interest in, and I think a classic area is finance, where the mathematics and the technicalities of financial analysis. You know, if you're going to work on hedge fund regulation, whether for the government or for private interests, then understanding something about how sophisticated derivatives are priced and whatnot, that might be helpful. Do that at the business school.
But I might still take Ken Anderson's. I would start with corporate finance. And then if that's not enough, go to the business school.
Yeah, but the short answer would be, talk to us after you've had a law school class and say, gee, I'm thinking about this. We're happy to talk then. It's premature, but it's certainly doable.
Right, or talk to the whatever professor in that area is. Other questions?
Owning your own business? I mean, obviously business associations and personal companies, but once you get into higher,
my turn,
which class or classes that you recommend? Obviously, that's a very general term. But
tell me the business, I'll give you the answer.
Let's start with small business.
No. That tells you the size. It doesn't tell me what you're doing.
Okay.
Are you going to be a technology firm?
More geared towards that way.
Oh, what a guess. I would say you should be taking some intellectual property. I think you should desperately be taking something that deals with the financial part. Creditors' rights, secured transactions, bankruptcy. Because
the first thing you're going to do is pledge everything you own. That's going to be day one.
One thing you do as a transactional lawyer is say, okay, what happens when everything heads south? What protections do you take for your client who's a lender to deal with that before things go down? And if you're a borrower, how do you structure your affairs to minimize the impact? Now, I'm not being facetious. Do you disagree with it?
No, I think that's right. Secure transactions is the one that comes to my mind first, because it really deals with how you get loans. That's one piece of it. The other piece to think about is the other money-raising classes. You'll get the basics in business associations, but corporate finance would make sense, although it does tend to be geared towards larger corporations. But insofar as you're talking about lending, secure transactions is probably the first place to go, and at least some of those courses, I think both the way Professor Hughes and I teach it, there's a lot about, what's driving the banks to do what they're doing, what's the strategy. Those are highly strategic things. Depending on your mindset, it's somewhere between chess, ballet, and world extreme cage fighting. So.
An asterisk on small business. A small law firm, a solo practice, is a small business. So tell your friends who want to have small law firms doing non-business things to take all the things that a small business person would take.
And I would add something like employment law, maybe pension law, because the problems that small business has, besides what they're doing in their business, can involve corporate law issues, lending issues, and employee-employer relations.
And those employment courses and stuff, those are listed in that business and law curriculum, because immigration, those things are key to businesses, yes.
I was just wondering, how many students do most of these classes take? Is it 30 to 50?
The answer, of course, is it depends. The quasi-required courses,
like
business association, have 75, 80, 90 students. The securities course, which tends to be the second corporate course people take, might have between 30 and 40. Unlike some other courses, once you get past those semi-quasi-required courses, the class size tends to get smaller.
Secure transactions tends to be between 30 and 60, sort of depending on what time slot they give us and stuff like that. And that's and I doubt that they would get much bigger than that, except for courses like BA. Seem right. Other questions? Okay, well, we'll stick around for a few minutes, Thanks for putting up with our song and dance.